And so, like, when I gave up the fantasy of thinking that I was going to, you know, do XYZ, then I have more time to read, which is what I really actually like to do. And I never have enough time to read. So I would rather use that time reading. Or, you know, you've got a lot of things you want to do outdoors. So let go of the thing that's, like, for whatever reason, just isn't a good fit. And now you have more time and energy to things that you do want to do.
I have a master's degree in physiology, biomechanics, and human nutrition. I've spent the past 2 decades competing in some of the most masochistic events on the planet, from SEALFIT Kokoro, Spartan Agoji, and the world's toughest mudder, to 13 Ironman triathlons, brutal bow hunts, adventure races, spearfishing, plant foraging, freediving, bodybuilding, and beyond. I combine this intense time in the trenches with a blend of ancestral wisdom and modern science, search the globe for the world's top experts in performance, fat loss, recovery, hormones, brain, beauty, and brawn to deliver you this podcast. Everything you need to know to live an adventurous, joyful, and fulfilling life. My name is Ben Greenfield. Enjoy the ride.
Well, hello. I've got my friend Gretchen Rubin on the show today. She's going to tell us how to clean up all of our crap. I actually got a lot out of this one. After I read her book, I got inspired. My wife was like, "What happened to you? I cleaned out my desk. I cleaned out my office. I cleaned out my bathroom drawers. I straightened up my bedside collection of all the blue light blocking glasses and CBD oil and books and PEMF devices. I just straightened up everything. It was crazy. She thought I was broken. I'm not broken. I'm just listening to Gretchen Rubin. You're going to learn what I learned in today's show.
Hey, you want to spice things up in the bedroom and boost your sexual performance and do it naturally without nasty prescription drugs? You got to check out this stuff, Joy Mode. It's a powder. You put it in water, or if you're like me and you're a savage, you can dry powder into your mouth. Contains clinically supported doses of L-citrulline, arginine, yohimbine, and vitamin C. So after taking this stuff called their Sexual Performance Booster, again by Joy Mode, your blood levels of arginine and yohimbine increase, and that directly promotes nitric oxide production, penile tissue relaxation, and increased drive. Well, the antioxidant action of vitamin C protects the nitric oxide from oxidative degradation, which then enhances the blood flow promoting activity of the nitric oxide. They thought of everything. They're super smart over at Joy Mode, and collectively these effects enhance sex drive and blood flow naturally to the penis or to the clitoris. My wife takes it too. It's amazing. You get better orgasms, better blood flow. You can kiss nasty prescription medications goodbye and have natural guilt-free energy for boosting your sexual performance. You can get 20% off your first order from Joy Mode. How? Go to usejoymode.com/greenfield. That's usejoymode.com/greenfield. J-O-Y. Usejoymode.com/greenfield. They'll give you 20% off your first order. I get laughed at, maybe because it's a little bit woo-woo, esoteric, invisible, whatever, but I use quantum energy. I pray over my food when I eat. I try and emanate positive emotions and feelings towards people. I do like little breath work and Tibetan longevity exercise moves to charge up my body with invisible energy. And yes, I even blast my home and my body with certain quantum energy products like necklaces and little boxes that I can use to charge up food. And I get this all from this company called Lila Q. Now, I realize that some quantum energy stuff is not provable by science, but Lila does have third-party studies revealing a remarkable 20 to 30% increase in ATP production, a vital process for cells. Quantum energy has over 59 studies already done and counting. These are randomized double-blind studies these folks are doing for blood quality and HRV optimization. I can't explain it, okay? I'm not going to sit here and pretend like I can explain how quantum energy would increase blood energy or blood quality. Could be placebo. I don't know. But all I can tell you is I wear their necklace. I use their products. I blast my home with their energy. And it's called Lila Q. I've got a podcast with them, a few, if you want to take a deeper dive. But you just go to the website. Check it out. It's kind of fun to surf around. And you know what? If anything, you're going to have some cool-looking conversation products at your house and hanging around your neck. I love them. Lila Q, LEELAQ.com. Use code BEN10 for 10% off. LeelaQ.com. Use code BEN10 for 10% off.
Last night, I got my shipment in.
That's right. Paleo Valley sent me their fermented meat sticks, which are amazing. They're these beef sticks. I gave a few to some of my friends already, which they love. I actually interviewed Stephen Gundry on my podcast, and he talked about how when you look at a lot of these blue zones, the ones that are the highest ranking in terms of longevity eat meat, but the meat that they eat is actually fermented. And that's exactly what they've done with Paleo Valley. They've actually taken really good grass-fed, grass-finished beef. They've fermented, which naturally introduces gut-friendly probiotics, but more importantly, breaks down a lot of the sugars that would normally cause meat to be harmful, concentrates the vitamins, makes it more digestible, and they have fantastic flavors. They got the original. They've got one that's like a summer sausage. They have a garlic sausage. They have a teriyaki. It's probably my favorite. And you can now get your hands on fermented beef sticks that basically blow that Slim Jim beef jerky out of the water. So check out paleovalley.com/Ben. That's paleovalley.com/Ben to try out these beef sticks and get 15% off your order. Not just beef sticks, fermented beef sticks.
Hey folks, it's Ben Greenfield, and if you're anything like me, then you tend to, especially in our information age, Internet of Things culture, like to find out about cool new toys and interesting new books and amazing new clothing that's full of self-quantified tools and copper-based antibacterial fabric, and you start to collect all these amazing things to improve your health and your fitness, or to make your life better, or to make life easier. And before you know it, your house is just full of a bunch of random crap. Or maybe I'm just describing myself, but either way, I recently read a book called Outer Order, Inner Calm. Outer Order, Inner Calm, Declutter and Organize to Make More Room for Happiness. And while I was reading it, I was like folding over every other page and circling all these things that were so intuitive and practical that I'd never actually thought of for cleaning up my house, cleaning up my bathroom cupboard and my closet and my sock drawer and my gym, and basically making life freaking easier, because when your environment is clean, your head tends to be clean and you get more done. It increases productivity and it just feels good. So I decided to get the author of this brand new book. Her name is Gretchen Rubin, on the show today to delve into some of these practical tips and hopefully give you some takeaways for cleaning up your life a little bit more to make you more productive, more healthy, and to make what you do have more meaningful, hopefully. So Gretchen is somebody you may have heard of before. She has a really popular podcast that you can download anywhere, and I'll link to it in the show notes if you go to bengreenfieldfitness.com/declutter. That's bengreenfieldfitness.com/declutter. And her podcast is called Happier. And on that podcast, she talks about habits, she talks about happiness, and if you want to tune into that, again, you can just go find it wherever fine podcasts are found. But she's also written books. She has a bunch of blockbuster New York Times bestsellers like Better Than Before and The Happiness Project and Happier at Home, and now this brand new book, Outer Order, Inner Calm. So Gretchen, welcome to the show.
I'm so happy to be talking to you.
Yeah. I'm curious, what inspired you to write this book? Were you just like loaded up with a pile of crap in your closet, in your bedroom, in your office like me? Or
That's part of it for sure. But, you know, ever since I started writing about happiness, when the Happiness Project came out, and talking to people about what makes them happier and the kind of habits that contribute to their happiness and their creativity and their, you know, feeling of productivity and energy, I've always been surprised by this kind of disproportionate connection between outer order and inner calm for most people. Some people do not feel that. They just don't, I call them clutter blind, because they like literally just don't see it. It doesn't matter to them. But for most people, to kind of an astonishing degree, getting control over the stuff of our lives makes us feel more in control of our life generally. And I really feel this myself. Like if I clean out a closet, like I feel great disproportionately great. And I feel energized and like, now I can tackle that difficult project. A friend told me, I finally cleaned out my fridge and now I know I can switch careers. And I knew exactly how that felt. So I'd been interested in this for a really long time. And finally I was like, you know what? I really want to write a book about it and really like go deep into this very kind of narrow, but very kind of profound aspect of happiness and productivity.
Has anybody actually ever studied this? Like actually looked into what goes on in the brain, whether brain waves or brain blood flow or anything like that when it comes to outer order and inner calm?
They have, but here's the problem. And this is kind of a like an issue that I think is related to a lot of things related to outer order and also to kind of happiness and habits generally. A lot of time what people are trying to figure out is what is best. So you'll see like research where they're like, are people more creative when they're in a neat laboratory or in a messy laboratory? Which is best? But or like when it comes to clear clutter, what is the best way to clear clutter? When it's a habit, are you better off doing something taxing first thing in the morning or later in the day? What's best? But the problem with that approach is that people are different. You know, something as simple as morning people and night people. For me, it's a great idea to get up early and do something that's difficult first thing because I'm a morning person. Mm-hmm. But there are night people who that's a low point for them. They're going to be much better to tackle something demanding later in the day when they're more energetic and creative and productive. And some people like to work in chaos. Like for some people, that is actually better. Now, what I argue is that even people who have like to have a lot of stuff around or who love abundance, like, or who like to have like unexpected juxtaposition, so they like to have a lot of stuff out on their desk at the same time, even they benefit from getting rid of things they don't use, don't need, and don't love. They don't want a bunch of junk. They don't want a bunch of trash. They don't want a bunch of cords. They don't even know what that cord is for. Files on the floor. I don't even know who those belong to. That's just in your way. But the idea that everybody's going to end up with like an empty desk with like one pencil on it, it's like some people like to work like that, but some people don't. And so I think that a lot of the research has been a little bit misguided in that it's like, well, what's the best thing? Is the best thing to work on a clear? Well, maybe not for you. Mm-hmm. So I think each of us has to say for ourselves, because again, you could do all the research and everything, but what I think most people really care about or what I care about is, well, what about me?
Yeah.
What do I do? And it's like, I don't really care what a bunch of undergraduates at Stanford are doing when they have a matchbook and a lump of clay and a candle and a thumbtack. It's like, whatever. How about me? And I know for me, I do much better when everything's cleared away.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Well, I want to jump just like right into the practical aspects of this. And the first thing is kind of deciding what goes and what stays. Do you have like a filter or a list of questions or a criteria that one could use as they're going through each room of the house to begin to tackle all the clutter?
Well, you're exactly right. And you're exactly right to start with that, because one of my lessons is don't get organized. Because a lot of times if you get rid of everything that you want to get rid of, you don't need to organize anything because you just like have one thing to put on the shelf. So you don't need some kind of elaborate filing system or some kind of weird storage gizmo. You don't have anything left. So always start by getting rid of things. There's kind of two questions that I would ask. The first is, you know, Marie Kondo is famous for asking, does something spark joy? And for many people, that's a hugely helpful question. But for me, that's a pretty high bar. And the idea that everything in my house sparks joy felt a little emotionally taxing. So I say, well, just this thing.
I have quite a few very cool dress shirts that don't necessarily spark joy.
Yeah. Yeah. So I say, does this energize me? Because sometimes like there's a pair of scissors where I'm like, it's not that it sparks joy. It's not like a really high, like some scissors are so well designed. They're like, this is a beautiful tool. This really sparks joy. Some are just like, you know, it's handy to have a pair of scissors in this drawer in my family room. So like I've had this pair since like fourth grade and it does the job just fine. So it energizes me in that it's a tool that's right at hand when I need it, even though it's just like, it's kind of like this old junky pair of scissors, but it still works. So it's energizing. Or another question that I like to ask is you say to yourself when you're looking at something, do I need it? Do I use it? Or do I love it? Because sometimes we have things that we love that we don't really need or use. Like I have some things where I'm like, I have this, my daughter always makes fun of me. She's a relentless clutter clearer. And we have a miniature tin Disney princess lunchbox. And she's like, why do we have this thing? And I'm like, for some reason, this thing just pleases me. I don't even store anything in it because I'm like, what am I going to put in my Disney Princess miniature lunchbox? But I just love it. And I'm like, you know what? I don't want to have my life so edited down that I don't have any room for something that I just love. But I love it. So, you know, I'm keeping it. I don't need it. I don't use it. Most things you're using or you're needing. And again, there's like the dress shirt where you're like, you know what? Every once in a while, I'm going to need a dress shirt. And it's going to be very satisfying to me. Really, like, I need a dress shirt and I have exactly the right thing. I'm just going to go to my closet and get it. I don't use it that often. I don't love it. But from time to time, I need it, and so I want to have it because when I need it. Same thing with like something like thermal underwear. Maybe you don't use it for 3 or 4 years because it's not cold enough, and then the year comes when you're like, now I need my thermal underwear.
But it might come in handy someday.
I think you have to be honest with yourself about what someday is. If Sunday is it going to be below 20 degrees in New York City? Highly likely. Are you going to have an urgent need for a 10-year-old rice cooker? Less likely, you know, mm-hmm. So that's where it starts getting into these tough decisions because really this process of getting outer order involves decision making and that can be hard. So, yeah. So that's a question I think often is helpful.
OK, so just to back up, you said, do I need it? The three big questions are, do I need it? Do I love it? And do I use it?
Yeah, because sometimes you have things that you don't really need them and you don't really love them, but you do use them. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, you know, you use them. Another thing to say to yourself is, have I thought about getting rid of this thing 3 times? Because of the endowment effect, we tend to hang on to our possessions more really than we should. The endowment effect means that once we own something, we kind of value it more than if we just saw it out in the world, like a mug. Once you own that mug and it's your mug, it's like it's more important to you than just like a mug that's walking down the street. But if 3 times you thought, you know, I don't know if I really need this thing or I don't know if I really want to wear this thing again, you probably should have given it away a while back. So if it's occurred to you 3 times, that's a very good sign, too, that it's time to get rid of it.
Okay. So somebody's listening in. They said they're going to declutter. When you're talking to people about this, have you found that it works best to just like identify a day or a week or a weekend to just go through and nuke everything? Or is there a better system?
Well, see there again, right? It's what's best. I don't think there is one best way because some people are like sprinters and they like intensity and they're like, I am going to do the entire basement in one day. And they get up at 9 a.m. and they work until midnight and they're so excited and it's like a big thing and it's all in and they want big results and they want to just like, you know, go big or go home. And that is great. But then some people don't like to do that. Some people get overwhelmed when they think about tackling too much. Some people don't have the time to do that. Like they don't have a day where they can just like spend the whole day cleaning out the garage. And so sometimes people like to do just like one shelf at a time. Or maybe even just like whenever I have 10 minutes, I'm just going to do like this drawer. I'm just going to do what I can. And one of the things that's interesting is we often will overestimate what we can do in a short amount of time, like one day or one afternoon, but then we underestimate what we can do if we do short periods of work consistently over a long period of time. If you spent 20 minutes clearing out your house over the course of 6 months, you would make very considerable gains. And so a lot of what I talk about is things like, well, you could do big things, but you can also do small things, whatever works for you. Because I do think that just because of realistically what people have an affinity for and what they have the opportunity to do. It's very different.
Okay. Got it. Yeah. I tend to typically have certain, for me, it's usually a Saturday or a Sunday where I'll have like 2 or 3 hours of time and be able to go through and organize something. I like to make it fun. I don't know about you, but whenever I have something I dread or don't want to do, like I'll find a podcast I've really been wanting to listen to or a chunk of an audio book that I really want to go through and don't laugh because I'm a fitness guy. Sometimes if I know it's going to be like a garage project, I'll put on ankle weights and a weighted vest and actually turn it into an actual workout to clean things out and get my heart rate up. And if you really want to biohack this, you can wear one of those fancy elevation training masks and limit your oxygen flow and just get an amazing workout and maybe even pass out while you're cleaning out that old camping gear in the garage. So that's how I tend to do it. But I also wanted to ask you, because this is a big thing these days, this concept of
minimalism, right? There's like a whole podcast about it. There's a whole movement on minimalism. Is this the same thing as minimalism, just like cleaning up all your clutter?
You know, I think there's different definitions of minimalism, so I don't want to overstate or put words into other people, like how they would describe it. But I think, at least to me and in the popular imagination, minimalism really means taking it down to like the studs, like really getting rid of a lot of stuff and really, you know, having only really what you need. And, you know, I think that's great for some people. But to me, there are simplicity lovers and there are abundance lovers. So simplicity lovers are people who love minimalism, and they want bare shelves and they want empty surfaces. And, you know, they want one vase with one rosebud in it and silence and, you know, kind of low choices, and everything is very simple. And that is great for some people. But some people love abundance. They love profusion. They like collections. They like things. They like choices. They like abundance. They like, you know, and I think of, like, you know, my parents. So when I go visit my parents, they have many more things, you know, on the counter, on the coffee table, whatever. Beautiful things, carefully chosen things, valued things, more than I would want, because I'm a minimalist. You know, I'm a simplicity lover myself, so I like a lot of just like bare. But it's not like I'm right and they're wrong, or I'm wrong and they're right. It's just we have different preferences. And I think, again, it's about getting to where you want to be. And I don't think – but minimalism sort of implies there's a place we should all try to go. Okay. I'm like, I don't think everybody's trying to head to the same place. And I don't think there's anything wrong with somebody who wants to have a bunch of – if you want to have a giant porcelain collection, great. I love it that some people want a giant porcelain collection. I don't want a giant porcelain collection, but that doesn't mean that I'm better or that my way is better.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Got now, what about the whole like mental aspect? Because in many cases you have these things, and we kind of alluded to this a few moments ago, those things that you feel like you might someday use, or you might go on this adventure, or you might eventually tackle all of these, you know, guitar books or pick up this instrument and learn it. And you don't want to necessarily get rid of it because you're kind of like mentally checking out of that thing that you think you might do someday. How do you mentally let go, or should you?
That is a very important thing, and it's a huge stumbling block within clutter clearing, and that's the fantasy self. So the fantasy self is the one that's going to go hiking in the Andes, the one that's going to learn to speak Portuguese, that's going to learn to play the guitar.
Yeah, you want to be a Renaissance person.
Yeah, cocktail party where I'm going to use linen napkins. That was my thing. Was like, I'm like, who am I kidding? Come on, I don't have the life, and I never will have the life where I have the slightest idea what to do with linen cocktail napkins. So you have to be – so part of what's painful about clutter clearing is it does mean facing up to what is true for you, and saying, you know what, I'm really not going to – I'm not going to learn to play guitar. I'm not going to teach myself to play guitar. And so I can get rid of those books. I can get rid of the guitar. I can get rid of the music stand. But the thing that happens is when you do that, when you let go of the fantasy self, you free up this immense amount of mental energy, because this thing that's been dragging you down and kind of making you feel maybe regretful, maybe guilty for spending money on things that have never been properly used, all that goes away, and you have all the – so you have more room in your head, and you also have more room in your shelves, because now you've cleared out these things. And so it's enormously helpful to face up to it. But it can be hard, because there's the fantasy self, which is the future self, but then there's us. Self, which is like, oh, I used to have a job where I wore these suits, and these suits were really important to me at one time, and maybe I spent a lot of money on these suits, but I'm no longer the person who wears these suits. Or the most painful kind of fantasy self, past self, is like, I used to be able to wear these clothes, and now they don't fit anymore. But if I get rid of them, am I saying that I will never be that body again? That is very, very painful for people. To let go of that idea, or even people who will buy things thinking this doesn't fit now, but if I buy it and spend all this money, then I will force myself to lose weight and fit into these clothes, you know, and this just doesn't work.
What about like a place that you would put this stuff as, like, you know, like a waiting space, like, you know, one room or one drawer where you say, I'm not using this right now. It was kind of on my bucket list a year ago. I don't know if I'll use it. Like, is that okay to have like a drawer or a location somewhere where you just kind of toss this stuff to let it wait?
Well, one thing you can do is you can have a box that you put the date on, and you put everything in the box. And then after a year, if you haven't opened the box, you throw the box away without looking at it. So you can do that with things like guitar lesson books, or you could do it with things like chords, where you're like, do I use this chord? Like, what is this chord for? Put it in the box. And if you never, because if the day comes when you're like, gosh, what I really feel like doing today is teaching myself how to play guitar, you'll know exactly where the books are because mm-hmm. you put them in that box. But then you just get rid of the box after a year. But you need to just, but I mean, but again, it's like, don't fool yourself, because you're just moving clutter around your house if you're perpetuating the fantasy. Now, part of one of the things that you can always ask yourself is, have I done this in the past? Where you're like, well, have you taught yourself an instrument in the past?
Mm-hmm.
If you had done it once, then it seems far more likely that you might do it again. If you've never done it, it's sort of like, why do you think that this is something that would ever happen? Or, you know, you've had this, you know, you're like, oh, I really want to get into needlepointing. So I like got myself this thing and I've never really done it. Some people, and this is something that some people are more prone to than others, they love to buy the stuff. I had a roommate like this where she'd go out and she'd buy everything for rollerblading. Lighting, the pads, the shirt, the vest, the
oh yeah, I'm totally like that.
And then
like,
she kind of be like, but then she never did it, you know. But the yoga mat, the yoga clothes, the block, never did the yoga. So like, look around and be like, is this the kind of person I am? Do I tend to like, you know, like, do I go out and get a lot of equipment and then it never really gets used? First of all, that can help you not buy things in the first place, which is the best way to clear clutter, which is never to buy it. But then it can also, you can say to yourself, look, these are related to a fantasy. And I see that it's not like if I keep it for 5 years, eventually I'm going to start doing yoga, you know?
Yeah.
Because we do sometimes buy the things to show respect for the idea of something we want in our lives.
It can almost kind of like bother you though. Can like, if you have, I mean, you feel guilty because, like, I bought a bunch of stuff two years ago. I really wanted to get into skate skiing. And, you know, Mount Spokane, 30 minutes from my house, it's got these great skate skiing trails and tracks. And I took my wife down to the Fitness Fanatics store down the street, and we got fitted. We got the boots. We got the skis. We got the poles. We got all the gear. And we went, like, twice. And it was okay, but you know, it was kind of a chore, and we were trying to like fit it in with everything else. And it was a good workout, but it was kind of hard, and we had to figure out if we were going to do that or do the downhill skiing or snowboarding instead. And so I have all this expensive skate ski equipment, and every single time I walk into the garage and I look at that,
yes,
like I have this pang of guilt. Like, I have this really cool skate ski stuff, but I'm not skate skiing. What's wrong with me?
No, 100%. And that's one of the reasons that outer order contributes to inner calm, is that when you say to yourself, okay, now I'm going to let these things go. And by the way, someone else is going to get enormous pleasure out of them. Yeah. So having them just go waste in your garage is practically the same thing as like burning them in a bonfire. You know what I mean? They're going to waste because they are not being used. So you can let those things go, and then you'll have more room in your garage and like more room in your head, because you won't have this sense of guilt and dread, and I should, but I haven't, and all the money. And also, here's the other thing that happens. When you get rid of all the things that you feel like you should do, but that you don't actually do, that means that you have more time and space and energy for the things that you actually want to do. And so like, when I gave up the fantasy of thinking that I was going to, you know, do XYZ, then I have more time to read, which is what I really actually like to do. And I never have enough time to read. So I would rather use that time reading. Or, you know, you've got a lot of things you want to do outdoors. So let go of the thing that's like, for whatever reason, just isn't a good fit. And now you have more time and energy to things that you do want to do.
How do you donate? Like, do you actually donate, or do you toss this stuff out?
Well, I donate when I can, for sure. And the greatest thing that has happened to me since I started working on this book is a thrift shop moved in. Like, they have a pop-up store like a block and a half from my apartment. I live in New York City, and it's like, it's right there. Literally, I walked by the window the other day, and a pair of my daughter's shoes was in the window. I'm like, I recognize those shoes. We gave those. So
yeah, but that can backfire. My wife has given away like my Iron Man triathlon t-shirts, and I'll see, like, I've actually seen this happened actually to me in Moscow, Idaho. I saw a dude walking down the street with, and he was obviously not like a fitness guy, but he was like wearing an Iron Man triathlon t-shirt that I swear was my t-shirt, and it bugged me.
Huh.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
well,
so,
I have to say, though, I think that's extremely rare. Yeah. I don't think that's happened to most people. You don't usually encounter your things.
Yeah. Like seeing someone else, like with the possessions that you thought you might use or held dear, using them. I guess that's just like another mental ego block that I need to get over. So,
well, I think it's very unlikely. But I think when you can give things away, it's good to, or recycle them if you can.
Yeah.
Certainly. But here's the sad thing, though. And I think this is something that we all just have to accept. People will say to me, I don't want to get rid of that because it's just going to the landfill. You created that donation to the landfill when you bought it.
Yeah.
The moment of purchase is the moment of landfill.
Yeah.
We cannot escape that. I mean, unless something is literally like turned to ash or something like that, like it's there. You know, that plastic yellow water pitcher that you bought, it's like, it doesn't matter if it's in your cupboard for 10 years or one. The landfill is the destination for it at some point, you know, down long decades. And so I think that's why it's really good to be very mindful of what you bring into your house, because if you're not really going to use it or want it or love it, it's best just to like one thing is store it at the store. You can say to yourself, it's at the store, and if I need it, I can get it from the store. I'm just going to store it there.
What do you mean store it at the store?
Just leave it at the store.
You mean like when you're shopping?
Yeah, you're like, I like this yellow water.
What if somebody buys it, though? What if they run out?
There will never be a time when you cannot buy a yellow water pitcher.
No.
If you want the water pitcher. I mean, what is so precious that you feel like this is a one-time opportunity?
Yeah.
Unless it's something that's handmade. It's very unusual that you will feel that you really decide you need it, you can't go get it.
That's related to something I want to ask you, actually, like shopping, whether online or offline. Do you have any systems that you use to when you're shopping and you see something that you know that you might use that's kind of cool, or you get distracted by something when you're at the store, like let's say I don't know, like you're out there to buy peanut butter and then you see almond butter and walnut butter and you add them all to your cart because they all look good. Or you're on Amazon and you're shopping for, let's say, maybe a Kindle. And when you're shopping for the Kindle, you see a couple other accessories that you could throw in along with it. And maybe you'd use them, maybe you wouldn't. Like, how do you approach either online shopping or offline shopping when it comes to resisting the accumulation of more clutter?
Right. That's a super important question. So one thing is, one distinction, just like we were talking before, people are different. There are underbuyers and overbuyers. I myself happen to be an underbuyer, and underbuyers actually have a lot of trouble buying. So we have to have ways to help ourselves buy what we need, because we will – underbuyers – I thought I was like the only underbuyer in the world because everybody talks about overbuying. But it's a thing. Underbuyers unite. So we have a different set of problems. But our problems tend to be cheaper, except that we do have to pay full price for things often because we've waited too long.
Right.
But for overbuyers, so if you feel like you're just buying too much, so there's a bunch of different things you could do. One, for online, if you're shopping online, cancel all of your accounts, all your stored information, and always shop as a guest. This will mean that you have to enter in all your shipping and billing information every time. And that is enough of a nuisance. It's not that big a nuisance, but it's enough of a nuisance that it's really going to cut down on impulse buying, because you're going to be like, I don't have time right now to like go, you know, blah, blah, blah. So that's one thing you can do. You can also unsubscribe to all newsletters with deals and stuff like that, because the vast majority of people do not need those deals.
Oh, trust me. I know. I use that website. I think it's unroll.me.
Yeah. A lot of people.
It makes it so easy to unsubscribe.
Yeah. Yeah. Also, one thing is, if you go to a store and they ask you, if you're like buying something in person, they ask you for your email address. If you say, I don't give out my email address, they always accept that. So I always do that, so they don't even, I don't want to even be unsubscribing. I just don't want them on. That is something that works if you're buying in real life. Another thing that you can do if you're in real life, some things to do are, don't take a cart or a basket. Force yourself to hold your things in your arms, because it's fine to like toss the three things of nut butter into your cart. But if you're carrying a thing of eggs, three things of nut butters, and, you know, two things of yogurt around the store, you're going to be like, this is a big pain. I think I will put the nut butters down. And then if I find that I'm thinking, oh my gosh, if only I had tried that almond butter, how rich my life would be, then you can go back for it, right? Because you can store it in the store. So forcing yourself to use your arms. Another thing you can do, and this is good, like if you're in a big box store too. If you see something and you're like, wow, that seems like something that I would really want, keep shopping. Leave it on the shelf. Keep shopping. Go around. And then by the time you're done and you're kind of approaching the cash register, say to yourself, then you can say, like, do I want to go back and get it? A lot of times you're like, eh, gosh, no, I'm done. I'm like right here at the cash register. I just want to pay and go. Because it's like, is it worth the effort? You know, what you're trying to do is break the impulse. Because the impulse is where I see it, I want it, I get it. It's so easy. Like, I just put it in the cart. I don't even remember. I get home, I'm like, I forgot I even bought that thing. So you want to break that impulse by forcing yourself to go out of your way to go back and get it. And remember, don't try to shop for as quickly as possible. The longer you are in a store, the more likely you are to buy more things. Don't touch things. The more you touch, the more you buy. Don't eat things. Like, don't take
free
samples.
That's an interesting tip. Don't touch it.
Yeah, the more you touch, and they know that. They know that. There's a fascinating book by Paco Underhill called Why We Buy. And this, of course, is of enormous interest and a subject of much study by retailers. So they've got all kinds of impulse purchase by the cash register because you're standing there bored. They've got, you know, they really have figured out, they're trying to get you to do it. So, you know, you really want to think about how to manage the experience so that you shop from a list is a great one. But part of it is just sort of acknowledging that it's something that you have. Like, let's say if you're like a person who you go into like a sporting goods store and you're always just like, man, that stuff just looks so good. Like, I just can't walk out, you know, or some people feel that way about Target. Like,
happens like sporting goods so stores. That happens to me all the time. Like, if I walk through, and again, not to kick this horse to death, but I'm like a fitness guy, right? So if I walk in and I see like, oh, the new little ball that you drop on the ground that bounces in a different direction to increase your reaction time, or these new hand grips that make it easier to deadlift the weight off the ground. Like, I can walk through and just feel like there's 10 new things I need to get.
Well, one thing you could do is you could make a note of it and then think about it, or you could make a note of it and look it up online and see like, well, what are people saying this is like really good, or they're saying, oh, this is kind of a gimmicky thing. Again, you want to break that impulse. And also just even saying to yourself as you're going in, like, this is a really tempting place for me. I'm probably going to see a lot of things I've never seen before that I'm really going to want. So, okay, just be on guard and remember, I'm here to get blah, blah, blah. I'm not here to, you know, add 15 different things. And the thing is, again, store it at the store. If those grips are something that you really want and you find yourself thinking, gosh, you know, that would really be in handy now to have that thing, then you can go back and get it.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because one thing that people often advise is using cash, because for most people, it seems that giving cash is painful. Like, you feel that cash leaving your hand. I'm definitely that way. Some people, however, actually find that it's easier to use a credit card because of the accounting. It's like, you know, you can't just sort of like fog out. You see where your money's gone. And so know yourself. One thing a lot of people do, this is really smart, is they'll have like a partner where if it's above a certain amount, if it's a certain amount of money, they have to check with somebody. Like, you know, is it okay if I buy this? I heard about a couple where they took turns each month being kind of the family financial officer. So if you bought something over $30, you had to check with the other person. So if you're like, oh, we really need a new electric kettle, it's like, okay, let me ask the chief financial officer, is this really a good use of our money?
Right.
So that you have that check.
Right.
But on the other hand, again, you have to think about yourself. I know somebody who didn't make big purchases, but she just frittered her way all her money on small purchases. So she asked her brother if it was over $100, she could just buy it herself, because she was careful about those purchases. But if it was under $100, she had to text her brother, because that's where she was spending her money. The 20s, the 30s, the, you know, the $15 here, like, and that's and it was just junk. It was just stuff that she was like, oh, it's no big deal. It's sort of, oh, I could use this, like, cool. It's this kind of funny pad of paper, like, you know, to write like handy little notes on. It's like, you've already got five things where you can write handy little notes. How fast are you going to use these things up? Like, yeah, it's only $15, but you do not need that. And you'll regret it. And it'll just be something to have to manage.
Yeah.
So for her, she figured out it was the little things. So you could also have a deal where nothing in the sporting goods, like if it's not on the list, you've got to clear it.
Yeah, I'm a, lists make it so much easier. Like, I travel a ton, and I'm a big fan of eating healthy when I travel. And a lot of times I'll have the Uber stop off at Whole Foods on my way to whatever hotel that I'm going to. And I have a very simple list. It's the same thing every single time. You know, I get avocados, I get a few cans of sardines, I get a little bit of that stevia flavored dark chocolate, I get some Pellegrino, I get some coconut yogurt, I get some like little seaweed wraps to be able to make myself like these little wraps with the avocado and the sardines, and I get some like some of the healthy sugar-free gum to keep my appetite satiated while I'm at a conference or at a talk. And it's just so simple. And I have it as a note on my iPhone. It's just like a stored note on my iPhone. So any city in the world, I can just drop in. Well, maybe not in the world. Not in Hong Kong. There's no Whole Foods there. But most places in the U.S. at least, I can just drop in, get the list, boom, done. And I'm not getting distracted by the brand new Spirulina Superfood Crunchy Granola bag that I could grab on my way out. And it just works. So yeah, I'm a huge, huge fan of those lists.
Yeah. I'm a low carb person too. And yeah, and you really do have to, you have to have a plan. Because it's like there's tons of food that for you, but you have to know where to get it and you have to have it at hand because it's not always in the mini bar.
Right. And those mini bars or those mini fridges are only so big. You can just fit so much into them and that system works. Now, a question back to the house and back to the clutter in the house. In the book, you use the term clutter magnet. I never thought of it in that context before, but can you get into what a clutter magnet is and why that's important?
So in most people's houses, certainly in mine, there are certain areas that just stuff is just constantly accumulating. It's like the Death Star where everything is just being pulled in and it just gets worse and worse. So for us, it's this certain area of our kitchen counter where stuff just gets put and then kind of never dealt with. And then more stuff goes on top of it. And then more stuff goes on top of it. And it kind of mounts up. And what happens is that if you recognize that something has a tendency to be a clutter magnet, you can really go out of your way to like every day say, I'm going to get it bare. I'm going to get it down to nothing because then stuff doesn't accumulate there. Because messy areas tend to get messier. And as people see that, oh, this is a place where I can just dump my junk. Like when I was growing up, it was our dining room table. Like if we had a clear dining room table, it was like people were coming over for dinner that night because it was just a constant mess. And that's just draining to see that. And also often important things will get lost. Like you don't know where you have an important tax statement that came in and it's somewhere under there. You thought you looked for it, but it's not there because it got stuck to something. It's draining. And so we know it's the kitchen counter, it's the top of the chest of drawers in our entryway. It's this one little table in my husband, my bedroom, that's where the stuff is. And so I make a special effort to get it down. And it's just, it's so dispiriting. I went to a friend's house because I'm always trying to beg my friends to let me help them clear clutter because like I get such a contact high from it. And if it's not your stuff, it's so much like there's so much less emotional pain and so much just like joy to it.
Mm-hmm.
So I go over there and I'm walking through has a very nice one bedroom apartment on like the Upper West Side, if you know what that kind of thing is. And I'm like walking through his bedroom and I'm like, the top of your chest of drawers is like a festering sore on my soul. It's such a mess. Like it's right in your bedroom. It's just like this mound of junk. It's like everything from dirty Kleenexes to change to your coat check from a restaurant you went to some really important looking invoices, like a ceramic duck. It's like, okay, what is going on here? It took like 10 minutes, 20 minutes, and he got it down to this shining, bare wood with like one attractive ceramic thing to put his change in. And he he emailed me the other day. He's like, I just walk by it. I'm just so happy. Because as there was just more and more stuff, it's like, well, of course, I'm just going to dump stuff here.
Yeah.
But then you clear, and then it's easier, so much easier to keep it clear because like you're like, I don't need that coat check. Let me put it in the trash. Yeah. Why is this change here? Let me put it in my change bowl. You know, oh, here's this really important bank statement. Why didn't I put it in my desk drawer so that when I pay my bills, it's right here? I mean, it just gets easier to maintain it once you have established that the clutter, you know, once you take it back to clear, then it's much easier for those clutter magnets to stay clear.
Gotcha. Okay, so and by the way, you're making me feel a little bit guilty about my ceramic duck collection. Yeah.
I love a ceramic duck. If it's like, but it's like, why the ceramic duck here? It's just like randomly put there because he's like, I don't know where to put the ceramic duck. I'm like, well, you could put it there if you want to keep it there, but
I don't think I've ever actually seen
a grown man wanted to have in his bedroom.
Yeah, I've never actually seen a ceramic duck. What about kids? How about training kids to actually declutter their rooms or declutter their spaces? Do you ever work with kids or do you have kids or suggestions for helping kids keep their stuff clean? Because my kid's room and my wife and I are working through this right now. It's kind of a disaster zone and we're trying to train them how having an orderly workspace and an orderly room helps give you more order in life. You know, I'm taking them through Jordan Peterson's 12 rules for life right now and trying to help them learn when chaos is good and when chaos is not so good. And in their room, chaos is typically not good. But do you have any tips or practical ideas to help kids take care of clutter in their spaces?
Yeah, it's funny. We talk about this. I have a podcast called Happier that I do with my sister, who's very messy, by the way, Elizabeth Kraft. And we were just talking about this on the Happier podcast. Well, part of it is how old are your children? How old are your children?
They're 10-year-old twin boys.
Okay, 10-year-old twin boys. Okay. So mine are 13 and 19. And so part of it is the kid. You know, like I think parents often think like I am the potter who is shaping the pot. Well, some pots, you know, you kind of get what you get and you don't get upset. My 13-year-old is like an orderly soul. She's been like nothing makes her happier than to go in and like rearrange her little things on top of a desk. And she's relentless. I had her come up here one time and help me clean my office. And I thought I was good. And we got rid of 3 bags of stuff because she's just that kind of person. And it's not because of me and how I trained her. It's how she is. My sister, Elizabeth, has been messy since the day she was born. I was there when she was born and it's always been the same. And she's gotten better. But she's clutter blind. She doesn't really care. You know, it's like she's busy. It just doesn't bother her. So it's hard to close a cabinet door because it doesn't bother her. So I think part of it is just the nature of the child. And so you have to just accept that you're not going to totally shape a person. Also with children, it's very easy for children to accumulate a lot of stuff, a lot of toys, just because of birthdays and holidays and they get stuff. And if it's enough stuff, it's really hard to manage. We feel this as adults. If you're a grown woman and you just have too many clothes and it just doesn't fit, you see people who are just completely overwhelmed and they're constantly like trying to put things, but it's like there's just too much. It's too much to manage. So I think the first thing, back to this idea that we were talking about at the beginning, don't get organized, get rid of it. Help your children really, really, really reduce how much they have. Really work with them to be honest about, do they actually play with puzzles? Do they actually play board games? How many decks of cards do they need? How many stuffed animals do they actually play with? You know, if you're constantly getting this thing and that thing, how many of them do you actually want? You know, some children, again, some children love a huge collection and they're playing with each one and they're arranging them and they're like, you know, doing battles or they're doing, you know, what my sister did. She would play hospital and like have a plague break out among her dolls. And she would be the Florence Nightingale. That was like a big thing she did. She's using all the dolls, right? Because she's got a hospital full of babies. So she used them all, but then others don't. And so really help them get rid of the things because then it's so much easier for them to manage. It's hard for children to do that on their own. Even Marie Kondo says the problem with children is that for them, everything sparks joy. Yeah. So you really have to help them understand, like, what are you actually using? And sometimes you can do things like, we'll take these stuffed animals and we'll put them away. We'll put them in a box. We'll put them away. And then you can kind of see if they ever miss them and stuff. And then maybe you can kind of spirit them away, you know, help them reduce. Also, as adults, maybe you don't experience this, but some adults, it's like something that their child once loved but no longer loves is of enormous sentimental value. So like, no, my child doesn't play with this Disney Princess tin lunchbox anymore. But to me, it's dear because it was once something that she loved. That's a different kind of problem. That's my problem, feeling attached to a child's toy. That's not the child being attached to the child's toy. So you have to approach that differently. But I think sometimes parents are like, oh, but all these Fisher-Price things are so wonderful. The farm, the house, the school, like, oh, they're all wonderful. It's like, even if your kid is like, eh, who pays with, I don't play with Fisher-Price anymore. So you have to really get clear on who's hanging on to what and help them reduce so that they can more easily manage what they have.
Now, you're also a fan, and you talk about this a couple times in the book, of making your bed. And of course, there's that relatively famous, I believe it's a TED Talk by a general, I forget his name now, but he talks about the importance of making your bed. I don't make my bed personally, because whenever I make it, my wife always has to remake it because I don't fluff up the pillows the right way and I don't tuck the sheets exactly as she would like. And so I just kind of quit making the bed because I know it's going to get remade anyways.
There's nothing like learned, deliberate incompetence to get you out of a task.
At the same time, I'm not complaining that somebody else makes the bed better than I do, so I don't need to. But when it comes to making your bed, why is that important when it comes to clutter? Can't you have a messy bed and an orderly home?
Again, see, I don't think that, like, you have to make your bed. I have people who are like, growing up, I had to make my bed every day. Now I'm a grown-up. I don't make my bed. And I look at that unmade bed and I just think, ha, 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 I can do what I want. I'm like, that's great. If that's what makes you happy, then don't make your bed. For many people, when they compare how they feel with a made bed and an unmade bed, they just really prefer the made bed. It just does make them feel better. There's something about establishing that bit of order on their environment that just makes them feel better. Then the whole room looks so much better. Then it's you're much more able to find things. Like if you can't find your wallet or you can't find your shoe, a lot of times it's because there's like bed clothes on it. And then also when you come back in at night, it looks much more orderly. And so it's a more restful experience because you think it just kind of looks nice. And the bed is interesting because there's certain possessions that we own that feel more tied to us, I think, in some kind of mystical way. Like your bed is much closer to you than like a dining room chair. It feels like for many people like a reflection of themselves. And so if their bed is in good order, then they might feel like they themselves are in better order because it feels like it's kind of a reflection of them. And so there's something about it. Now, it's interesting to imagine if your wife was like, you know what? You're right. I'm just gonna let this go. I wonder if you would make the bed yourself in your own way because you just prefer walking into a room at the end of the day and having the bed made. Hard to know. Maybe you would, maybe you wouldn't. You don't face that. My husband and I have a thing where whoever gets up second makes the bed. So if you get to sleep a little bit later, you don't have to make the bed. And so
And
I usually get up first. So that works for me. But if he gets up early, then I'm the one that makes the bed. And that's kind of a nice way to divide it up because it's sort of like either way, you kind of have a little bit of a benefit.
Yeah, it's kind of funny because I wake up first, but I have this, don't laugh, like this elaborate system where I sleep on this like special mat that emits what are called pulsed electromagnetic field frequencies. It's called PEMF, and it helps you to fall asleep. It's kind of like that concept of earthing, grounding, like going outside barefoot, but this kind of concentrates those frequencies during the entire night of sleep. So my body's like healing of inflammation as I sleep, but there's this little button on it. It's called, I forget if it's called a biobalance or a body balance mat. I'll remember and put it in the show notes for folks, but you push a little button when you wake up and it does what's called an energy sweep where it takes you from like low frequency up to high frequency. So you're in alpha brainwave zone by the time you pop out of bed. And then I lay there and I always read a morning devotional and then I do my gratitude journaling. I've got a gratitude journal I designed where you write down one thing that you're grateful for, one person who you can help that day, and one truth that you discovered in that morning's reading. So even though I wake up first, I'm laying there doing all this elaborate journaling and reading and getting blasted by my little mat. My wife is, of course, already up and out of bed. So I suppose if I were to follow that advice, I would probably be the one making the bed every morning. But again, I'm in this unique scenario where my wife's going to probably go remake it anyways. So it's good.
But again,
advice,
I think that's why it's like there's no one right answer. It's kind of like, well, it sort of depends on you and your situation and your values and your background and like what else you like, you know. So I would never say like everyone should make their bed because some people just A, don't care, or B, you know, like just feel like it's an exercise in freedom that they enjoy. The one thing that I don't get is, so whenever I talk, I make my bed, I'm the kind of person that makes my bed in a hotel room on the day I check out, because I just can't stand to be in a room without a made bed. So it just like, so I do it for aesthetic reasons.
Oh my gosh.
And the funny thing is, people would be like, oh, because of dust mites, you should not make your bed. I'm like, what? Like, the one thing I'm not worried about in this world is whether a sudden attack of dust mites is going to somehow interfere with me because I made my bed. Like, I'm like, that is in the category of things that I just feel like we do not need to, like, something else is going to come up first, you know, rears its head as an issue for me. So that's something, that's like the one kind of objection to bed making that I'm like, huh. Well, the bed mites. But, you know, if you feel like you don't want you're worried about the bed mites and that's why you leave your bed undone, then that's your value and that's why you're doing what you're doing. And for you, that would be the right choice.
Now, what about this whole concept of outsourcing? And it's kind of a two-part question. A, are there like people or organizations who could come into your home and kind of like do this for you to a certain extent, like clean sweep your home for you? And then second question is, what about having an assistant or someone that you hire if an organization like that doesn't exist to, you know, like hire somebody and hand them Gretchen Rubin's book and say like, take this book and go through my house and do what it says.
I think except for the most like top level of clutter, it would be very hard for somebody to do that without your participation, because it's like, well, what clothes do you actually wear? Or, you know, what is important? So I think there is a level of decision making that, and that's what's partly what's draining is the decision making. So I think it would be very hard to just hire somebody to do it.
Because
I think if you're the kind of person who could do that, you probably threw all this stuff away before. You know what I mean?
I guess so.
It's like, if you don't have like a concert t-shirt from college already, like that's the kind of person who could be like, hey, come in and throw away my concert t-shirts. I don't care. But there's definitely people that you can have come in and that can help you. This can help for a lot of reasons. One is sometimes people just get so overwhelmed. They don't know where to start. So they want somebody who is going to help direct them and kind of help them stay focused. But, you know, sometimes, and again, people are at different levels. Like sometimes people, you're like, wow, you need professional help. But one thing that I've noticed, because I do try to force myself on my friends, is a lot of times people just, they need somebody there to kind of help them stay on task and maybe to help with a little bit of the grunt work. Like, okay, I'll hold the garbage bag open, or I'll tape up this box of books that we're going to give away, or, you know, kind of help with that. Or, you know, somebody says, well, does this look good? You could be like, yeah, that looks, you know, that doesn't look, usually the answer is no, that does not look good. If you're asking, does it look good? No, it probably does not look good. That kind of thing. But part is just, it's helpful to have somebody there for just kind of moral support. And it's funny to me how often I'm not even really doing anything. I'm just there as a quiet presence to help somebody else do what they need to do.
Yeah.
So if you're like, I don't have the money for a professional organizer, I'm like, have your friend, have a buddy come over. Tell them that like you'll buy them, you know, beer or Diet Coke or coffee or latte or whatever. And could they spend a couple of hours just like hanging out with you while you do this? I bet you have a friend. I would come if I knew you in a flash. A lot of people find this kind of relaxing, weirdly, and we'll find it like energizing and helpful to be there with you. And you can do a lot that way. Now, if you want to get into some kind of like super advanced, like storage unit stuff, like California closet kind of thing, like, I don't know how to do that. I'm not a professional organizer. I'm just somebody who like is very interested in like, do you really want to have this thing in your house or not? Or like, do you really need this thing in your office? Cause it doesn't look, it's covered in dust. So I'm thinking that it's not that useful to you. So I think other people can be helpful. It's interesting, back to Marie Kondo, who's sort of like the giant in the space. Marie Kondo really advises people to do it by themselves. And I think
what's her name?
Marie Kondo wrote the book, The Life-Changing Magic of Tidying Up, which was a huge book about clutter clearing about 5 years ago.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, she's got a very, very specific system, which I think works great for some people. But in my experience, people often can't do it really her way. They pick and choose because her way is very, very like stringent. She advises, you need to have the right kind of person, because there's like a friend of mine, I was over helping a friend of mine clear her clothes closet. And she said she tried to have her mother come help her, But her mother was like a person. Some people are like the defenders of possessions, and they'll be like, "But that's so nice. You could wear that, or if you just got that tailored, that would fit great. Or oh, you don't want to get rid of that. Like you don't want that kind of person because you want somebody who's going to be encouraging you to let go of things if you're trying to clear clutter. So don't pick somebody who's going to find it, or like every time you put something in the pile to give to the thrift shop." You find them like literally taking things out and putting them on the shelves. That happens. There are people who will do that. That is not the person that you want helping. You want somebody who's like, you'll be happier if you get all this junk out of your house.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
But there's a lot of those people.
Now, what about this concept of feng shui? Like, does this tie into feng shui at all? I know some people will hire people to come into their homes, and based on this, you know, this Chinese principle of using, you know, the organization of the home to create certain energy in different rooms. Do you ever do any work with feng shui, or have you had someone come into your home and do anything like that?
Well, feng shui is really a set of beliefs. It's a very profound set of beliefs about the world and how the world works and energies, and it's just like, I don't believe it. You know, I don't accept those beliefs. Those beliefs have no meaning to me. And so a lot of feng shui, I'm like, it's kind of common sense, which is like, if there's something related to something in your life that's kind of dead or finished, get rid of it. So if you have a dead plant, get rid of your dead plant. If you have a framed photograph of your ex-boyfriend who you now really dislike, get rid of the picture of your ex-boyfriend. That's just, to me, that's good common sense. But some other stuff, it's really like, hang a mirror over your toilet because that's going to bring prosperity or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
I'm like, I don't, to me, that's just creating work.
I don't want to be taking a dump and look up and see myself.
I mean, it's sort of like, or like tie a purple ribbon around. You know, I mean, it's like, it's related to beliefs that I don't find to be true. And so I feel like it's just making, I wouldn't do it. You know what I mean? I think it can be interesting because sometimes anytime people talk about ideas in sort of a different framework, it kind of shakes you up out of your own set of assumptions, that it can be really helpful. So I've actually read several books about feng shui because I think it's interesting to see how they talk about flow and energy and like what things bring energy and what things deaden energy. Like one thing they say is like, don't have a bunch of stuff under your bed. Now, the argument that feng shui proposes about why that's a bad idea, I do not accept as a matter of kind of like principle, but I think it's absolutely true. Having a bunch of junk just jammed under your bed, you don't even know what's under there, that's not good. That's just clutter. That's just like a dead zone in your home. Get rid of it. You'll feel lighter and clearer and freer, and you'll also know where all your stuff is if you get it out. So I agree with the idea. I don't agree with the logic of it, but I still found it helpful because I thought, oh, they're pointing out a lot of things I wouldn't have thought about, or they're pointing it out in a different way. So if you believe in feng shui, if you think it's – I mean, there are people who are – whole office buildings are designed specifically for feng shui because people devoutly believe in the principles. So I'm not saying that they're not
– Yeah, I think
– To people who really believe it, it's like – go all the way, but I think don't feel like, oh, I should have a feng shui person come in if you don't really believe in feng shui. It's like, yeah. You don't need, you know.
Yeah, I like the idea of mindfully arranging your home. Like, for example, having natural lighting in areas where you want a lot of like yang energy, or maybe eliminating the TV in a private place like the bedroom where you want more yin energy. I kind of like that idea.
Do you really believe it's yin energy, or you just believe like it's a better idea not to have a TV in your bedroom? I don't have to bring the yin energy in because I'm like, I don't really believe in yin energy, but I believe in the principle of like natural light is good for people.
That's interesting. These are a ton of really good practical tips, and the book is of course chock full of many more. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to link to, if you're listening and you go to bengreenfieldfitness.com/declutter, I'm going to link to Gretchen's book and her podcast and website, but she's also mentioned some other books like Why We Buy or The Life-Changing Magic of Tidying Up, and I'll put some links to some of those other resources that we talked about as well. And I would recommend you go and check out her website. She's got some really great blog posts. If you look at some of her top 100 blog posts on her Instagram channel, she does like a Monday post of all the books that she's been reading. And so she's got a lot of really good information. So if you don't know Gretchen and don't follow her, I recommend that you look into what she's doing, because she puts out some really good advice, and her podcast Happier has some good stuff in it too. So I'll link to all that at bengreenfieldfitness.com/declutter. And in the meantime, Gretchen, thank you so much for writing this book and for also coming on the show and sharing all this stuff with us.
Oh, it was so fun to talk to you. Thanks for having me.
Awesome. All right, folks. So I'm Ben Greenfield, and it's Gretchen Rubin. The name of the book is Outer Order, Inner Calm, Declutter and Organize to Make More Room for Happiness. Thanks for listening. Have an amazing week. Well, thanks for listening to today's show. You can grab all the show notes, the resources, pretty much everything that I mentioned over at BenGreenfieldFitness.com, along with plenty of other goodies from me, including the highly helpful Ben Recommends page, which is a list of pretty much everything that I've ever recommended for hormones, sleep, digestion, fat loss, performance, and plenty more. Please also know that all the links, all the promo codes that I mentioned during this and every episode help to make this podcast happen and to generate income that enables me to keep bringing you this content every single week. So when you listen in, be sure to use the links in the show notes, use the promo codes that I generate, because that helps to float this thing and keep it coming to you each and every